the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, in episode, I think, is 374. It's episode 374, recording on a Tuesday night with Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation's family of sites, and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We were hoping and thought that the Cardinals could win this game. I did, at least. But at least it said we wanted to be at a competitive. It was a very mixed bag, a very frustrating game, and it feels like Cardinals fans are going out of their minds right now, because if you combine the end of last season with the drama of the offseason, the injuries of the preseason, and the lack of success of the early season, and you have a terrible, terrible feeling about this team, when the truth is, they're not that bad off in the grand scheme of things right now.
No, they're really not. And it's something you and I talked about, where it was, they just, this is where we expected them to be. They needed to beat, the Raiders. They needed to be competitive against the Rams. And obviously, as we get to the end of the show, we'll talk about it, but they need to beat the Panthers. And so they've done those things, except obviously the Panther situation right now. And so as much as people want to be upset with the outcome of the game, they are where a lot of us expected them.
They're not off schedule. In a year where their offense has been off schedule for like the first half of the season, you know, the first quarter of the season has kind of been like the first quarter of their games right now, let's be honest. But they are not terribly off track, and we'll talk about that. But let's start things off. We've got a Cardinals 20-12 loss to the Los Angeles Rams, one of the more competitive games that we've seen from the Cardinals against the Rams. The downside, they fell behind 13-0 again. They haven't scored in the first quarter. It's now 7 straight losses at State Farm Stadium, and it's 11 losses in 12 matchups against the Rams. Still haven't beaten them in State Farm Stadium since 2014. So there's a whole lot of stuff to unpack. And in this show, we're going to start out talking about the good and the bad from the game. We're going to discuss, are the Cardinals bad? And I think you guys, by the foreshadowing we've had, are indicate that we don't think that the Cardinals are bad yet. We'll look at some of the playing time. We're going to look at the pass rush, some injuries that continue to be a problem, and look ahead to their game against the Carolina Panthers. Let's start off with the good and the bad from the Rams game. I think the first thing that we look at is, I mean, there are two major things, and they are recurring things. And like I mentioned before, you've got the terrible end of last season, the drama of the offseason, and so on and so forth. And so everything seems to be snowballing into kind of a panic scenario for the Cardinals, at least for their fans. And when you fall behind in yet another game, despite the, you know, point of emphasis, the emphasis on starting strong, starting quickly, starting fast, and yet offensively, again, 3 and out, and they've fallen behind. They still have not scored in the first quarter. They fell behind 13-0 again. They're playing from behind, and it's going back to last year. This team is not built to play from behind. Maybe a little bit more than last year, but still, this team is not built. This offense is not meant to come from behind. It's meant to build on a lead. And so I guess that's kind of the one thing. Is what do you see the problem is? Why can't they manage to get a few first downs, get some points in the first quarter, what seems to be ailing them over and over again?
That's kind of the million-dollar question right now, and what they need to figure out if they want to prove all the naysayers wrong is that they can figure out how to get this into a mode where they're successful. And at the end of the day, that's what the biggest issue is, as you stated. Like, they're starting every game in a hole, and it's a self-induced hole. So it's not like we can be like, oh, well, you know, this or that, but that's what they have to figure out. So I don't know if it's Cliff, I don't know if it's Kyler, I don't know if it's the combination of the two. Like, they need to figure this out if they want to truly be a team that can compete for a playoff spot in 2022. And that's the thing, is through three games, the biggest hindrance to their success has been themselves. Like, you watch this game and you watch what happened in the game against the Rams, and the Rams weren't beating the Cardinals. The Cardinals were continually shooting themselves in the foot and allowing the Rams to really just take control. And that's, you know, at the end of the day, what was going on. I mean, you look at the first series, right? You've got Murray completes a short pass to Zach Ertz, and then James Conner goes up the middle for 2 yards. So it's third and two, and they throw a deep shot.
It's
to
that
AJ
shot,
Green.
Yeah, that shot to AJ Green, that which can be successful a lot, but it was well defended, and the ball, like, if Kyler, like, that throw we've seen him make perfectly before. That was not perfect because it was an easy play for Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, and so that's the thing, is if they want, like you're saying, if they want to get off to a fast start, they can't put themselves in that position. And that's, you know, how the game started. And so all of a sudden you're starting off, I don't want to say in a negative, because it wasn't a negative, but like you're
but
putting
it was
your...
it was another three and out start a game, so you're like, oh, not again.
Right, and that's what they need to figure out and overcome, is that it just seems like every time they start a game that they're behind immediately. And so, you know, they had a number of self-induced errors. They had, you know, miscommunications on routes. They had drops from receivers, tight ends, running backs. I mean, you name it, outside of Marquise Brown, they dropped it.
It was bad. It was bad.
Ertz had
the end zone drop. He had the later drop, that's a hard one, because that was just a hard catch. So if he gets one of those two, you're feeling good. James Conner wasn't ready for one. Eno flat out dropped one. AJ dropped two. Andy Isabella didn't finish running the route late in the game. Andre Bocelli on a very quick, and I think that was just a miscommunication. Kyler threw the ball deep immediately. Bocelli broke his route, and I think that was one of those looks where they saw one-on-one on the outside, and a guy like Bocelli who can get past people, and Kyler was just throwing it up. Because they've seen that look before, and it just didn't happen. But we were talking about kind of before the show, what's ailing the Cardinals is the fact that, especially offensively, nobody is making plays but Kyler. And if Kyler's not making plays, like if he's not being special, then nothing's happening. And that's a lot to put on your quarterback who, let's be honest, Kyler is not playing well. The problems that they're having offensively are not Kyler's fault, per se, because he's making good reads. He's making good throws for the most part. There have been a couple of things you can probably criticize, but like if you look at how he's operating the offense he's doing his job well. There, you're not looking at a guy making mistakes or errors out there who, that's one of the biggest takeaways. It's just that for whatever reason, they're not getting, and all they need, and we know this is a rhythm offense, they need somebody to make a play early, and then they get in rhythm. Against Las Vegas, that was Greg Dortch. Greg Dortch makes that 129-yard catch, and then all of a sudden, boom, that offense starts getting on schedule. If you can get someone to make some sort of play early, it doesn't even be big play, whether it be, you know, Eno finding an open space to get a first down, getting a field goal on a drive to start the game, whether it's their first possession, like if they get a stop and they take a lead, or at least getting points on the board so that they are not on a two-score deficit almost immediately. I mean, offensively, it was frustrating because then you felt like they finally got a little bit of rhythm, and then they couldn't. And it was one of those cases where we've seen, you know, defenses will try to make you take 15, 16, 17 plays down the field because you're bound to make mistakes down. It's hard to stay consistently good over an entire drive to do that, and that's exactly what happened. And so the Rams kept everything in front of them. They defended well, so they played strong on the back end, keep things in front of them, and let their strong defensive front cause problems. And so while the Cardinals would manage to move slowly down the field, when it mattered, they were able to make plays and hold them to 3 points instead of the touchdown. And so what hurts right now is we've built up this team and we felt that this offense has been, the offense had to be great. That's how this offense was built. It's supposed to be great, and it hasn't been great because they're not getting in rhythm early. And once they're in a deficit, then game planning kind of gets thrown out the window. Lack of execution early leads to an inability to execute what they wanted to do offensively against their opponents.
Yeah, and like you said, it sets up the defense to be more aggressive. And I will say this, the defense wasn't awful in this game, but they again failed to get stops when they needed them the most, right? Like, And you saw big plays happen when they had a chance to make big plays the other way. And so that's, to your point, the issue is that you've got two sides of the ball, and one is built to be the big play machine, right? The offense is built to be the machine that gets these big plays and puts up points and does all of that. The defense just, quite frankly, isn't built for that right now.
He was talking about holding them to three,
and he did
like
that.
Three times five. That's kind of what he says. They want, like, their overall kind of their goal. Obviously, you want to stop them, but if they can hold their opponent to in the red zone, if they get in the red zone five times, they limit to 3 points. The defense wasn't bad. They get carved up early. There was both good and bad. Like, obviously, they did very well, sort of the middle two quarters of stopping them, making stops, getting off the field. Because they did that extremely well. But they're not getting sacks. They're not getting their hands on balls. And you know how many passes they broke up on Sunday? Not a single one. Matthew Stafford was 18 of 25, so there were only 7 incompletions. There were a couple overthrows, and there were a couple drops. Their incompletions were not because of the Cardinals' defenders. They're not getting their hands on balls. And so you're not getting sacks, and you're not getting hands on balls. It's really hard to stop a defense, to stop an opposing offense over and over and over again. Though I will say, what is happening with the pass defense where they can almost erase a number one receiver? That's 2 weeks in a row. Two of the best, absolutely the best. And what? How? How do you do that?
Yeah, and you're seeing, you know, the maturation of Byron Murphy, and he's becoming a very good corner, which is, you know, it's a double-edged sword. It's something we talked about. Like, they've needed him to be that. And quite frankly, none of us have really had the patience for him to become that, right? Like, we were like, oh, no, this needs to happen at a faster pace and happen, you know, sooner. And quite frankly, it's because the Cardinals needed it, right?
Right. Well, and there, you look at it, they've kept saying how good he's in the slot, Galhood in the slot, because they've really kind of discouraged his play on the boundary. And lo and behold, year four, what is he doing extremely well? He's playing the boundary really, really well, when that supposedly is not his best trait.
Right, and now you're seeing him become this kind of, I mean, lockdown's a very strong word, so let's not go there. But he's becoming a very effective corner one, which is something we didn't expect, right? It was something we had hoped to see. But just to be fair, it's something we had not expected or seen thus far.
No, we really hadn't seen that at all.
And so it made sense that you just didn't expect it to come. And it's equally as impressive when you think about, you know, one of the biggest issues, or the biggest issue for this defense, is that they literally just cannot create pressure.
Like, interesting fact, like, this blows my mind. Is this the stat that from ESPN? Let me try and find it. Well, I can't remember the exact stat, but it was about pass rush win rate, which it means, you know, basically beating your blocker. And the Cardinals are number one in pass rush win rate. So they are beating their blockers, but aren't affecting. I mean, Stafford. Cliff mentioned it, so they did move him. But they have two sacks total in three games. They have a few hits. But, like, something we've mentioned over the years, pressure is somewhat overrated in terms of a stat. It makes it more likely to lead to a big defensive play. But unless you actually sack the quarterback or break up a pass, those two main things, pass breakups and sacks, then you are just creating a higher probability for an offensive failure, but it doesn't guarantee an offensive failure.
Right, and they've just, like you said, they haven't been able to finish, and no bigger proof than that in that third down play when Zaven Collins has a free run at Matthew Stafford and gets beat by Matthew Stafford, and that just becomes an issue.
That was the backbreaking play of that game.
It really was, because they had gotten it close. They cut
third and 11. It gets the first down. Otherwise, it's going to be three and out. They get the ball back, and that drive, they score the touchdown that puts it out of reach.
Yeah, because it was 13-9 at that point.
Yeah,
correct?
Yeah.
And so, it it becomes this issue where, at that point, instead of being able to get off the field, you end up extending the drive, and it goes from third and 11 to first and 10, first and 10, second and 5, first and 10, second and 4. Like, that's how that ended. And, you know, it's a situation where that's where the warts are being seen, and you're just unable to, like we said, make the big play on either side of the ball. But it should be the offense that does it. But now they're getting down to the point where it's really hard to see them doing it, because quite frankly, they just are starting to run out of talent at the skill positions.
Oh, geez, yes. And so there are some good things. There are some bad. There were a lot. It's just a ton of frustration. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, let's move forward and kind of go as over at 1-2, where the Cardinals are now a top 5 team in the waiver wire. Are they a bad team? Or are they not? Like, are we already there? That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. It feels like, among the fan base, that the rhetoric is time, like, and on, let's be honest, when you extend your coach and GM and your quarterback, and then you start off in the fashion in which you have, it's hard. Cardinals fans have gone through a lot over the last 8 months. They've gone through a lot in the last 8-9 months. Okay, let's go 10 months, because of after Kyler's injury and Hopkins' injury, how the season ended. Again, the end of the season, the off-season drama, the preseason stuff, the terrible starts to game. It's just a lot for a fan base to deal with. They kind of look like a bad team, and I know that I'm super, I'm always optimistic. I'm not ready to give up yet, because even at 1-2, with the next three games, they are very much in line to being 3-3 before DeAndre Hopkins comes back. And they have a number of players. So over the next few weeks, they'll be getting back Rondale Moore, Antonio Hamilton, DeAndre Hopkins, Charles Washington. These are big additions that they were expecting to, they were expecting to be big contributors. And if you come it out and if they come out of this 6-game stretch 3-3, and I don't think that's overly optimistic, because the next three games they've got Carolina, not good, Philly, amazingly good right now, and Seattle, not good. All the Cardinals have to do is to beat the not good teams, which they should be able to do unless they themselves are a bad team. I'm not ready to say they're a bad team yet. They've played bad games. They played a bad game against Kansas City, who was a very good team. They played a great second half to come back and beat, well, what might be a bad team in the Raiders. They played a not good game against the Super Bowl champions. And so, are the Cardinals a bad team? I don't think so. But I think this week, they have to win this game. Not to save their season, but to save hope for fans. Because if they do not win this game, I don't know what this fan base is going to do.
Yeah, this is a tough one. And, there's a lot going on the East Coast right now. If you're listening to this on the East Coast, hopefully you're safe. Because, the Cardinals could be playing in heavy weather conditions due to hurricane that's going on, in that region. And so it's just a tough, tough situation. And like you said, they've got to come out and really, at this point, own it. They've got to come out and play a complete game. They have to come out and put up numbers on offense. They have to make plays on defense. They need to do that if they want this fan base to believe in them. But the reality is, and SB Nation does a confidence poll every week. And after the Chiefs games, the swing to the negativity was, 13% confident in the team. Not shocking. I mean, they didn't look good. We can understand that. After the Raiders game, the boost in confidence only went up to 36%. And so I'm expecting this to come back in the 10 to 15% range again, confident in this team, because there is no wait until, because like you said, this team hasn't done enough to earn that from the fans recently.
Yeah, they're playing seven straight losses at home. Bad end of the season.
Yeah, the bad end of the season. And like you said, seven straight losses at
season.
Home.
This offseason was just stupid.
And so, it's only going to become palatable if you show it on the field. And like you said, right now, they're just not showing it on the field.
No, no. Which, you know, if they beat the, like, and we'll talk about it coming up. Like, this is a Panthers team that has yet to get 300 yards of offense. They have a good defense, but they do not have, I don't think that they're a great defense, but offensively they're very, very limited. That said, you know, if this is a week, if you can kind of get things tightened down, they're so close. Honestly, they're so close. The Kansas City game was stupid. That was bad. Oh, the Las Vegas game, you feel better after how they turned things around. Defensively, they flipped the switch. Offensively, they flipped the switch. There were things to like about the Rams game, but not enough. And get to 2-2, then you're kind of on schedule. You're competitive against Philly, and then beat the Seahawks. Where you okay? So you're then 3-3 with two competitive losses, and you get Hopkins back, Hamilton's back, Rondell Moore's back. You've got to feel a lot better after that. That Saints team looks underwhelming. Then you've got the Vikings, who are always underwhelming.
Who look underwelming right now.
Yeah, and that's so the thing with the Vikings team. They're good but not good.
Right, and you're just in a position where it feels like you have a chance to be, you know, a good team. And so that's the thing is, like, yes, at this juncture, would you say they're a good team? No, they haven't been a good team through the first 3 weeks of the season. They've had good moments. They've had good plays, you know, this and that. But as of now, they're not a good team.
I don't think they're a bad team. But they're playing in a division? Guess what? The NFC West is a mess right now.
Right. And so that's the other kind of thing is that San Francisco looked really, really bad in their game against Denver. Denver's got a pretty good defense, but I mean, they looked bad.
Trent Williams got hurt, which is that's a game changer for them.
Yeah, I mean that is a massive thing that we already know they're without Trey Lance. Jimmy G looked really bad in that game. And so, you know, you just look at it and you wonder where and how they get right, and you say, well, this division, and remember the Cardinals played like a C-minus game and they still had a chance. So it's not just all doom and gloom, but I do understand why fans at this juncture don't want to take the bait. I truly do. Like, you're still saying, no, let's show it, prove it to me on the field. And like you said, you and I are on the train, like, hey, get to 3-3. And from there, we'll judge this team.
Yeah, 2-4, 1-5, it's going to be a really hard sell. They're going to have to turn things around significantly. But, I mean, the narrative has been that they're terrible at the end of season. What if they can turn that around and start bad? We have no confidence. We have no evidence that they're going to improve the second half of the season because they've never done it.
That's what makes me laugh, man. And I'm not saying it's going to happen, but man, we've just criticized this team for fast starts. And all of a sudden they're not starting fast. You know, they've got issues and we're criticizing this team for not starting fast enough. And don't get me wrong, they're not playing well. So it's not like you can be like, oh, they're fine. You know, everything's going to be fine. I get it. You want to wait and see what they have. But at the same time, like, that was your complaint, is that they always started fast and faded. And now they're not starting fast. And you're going, what is wrong with you? And so, you know, yes.
Well, especially everyone talked in the offseason. What a brutal schedule. How are they going to start fast? No DeAndre Hopkins for 6 weeks. You know, all of that. What did you expect? What did you really expect?
Yeah. And so, you know, right now, I wouldn't say that they're a good team. But I don't think that they're a bad team. I think that they're a team that's kind of in limbo.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk. Let's talk about, let's go on and talk about more some stuff. We're going to talk about playing time specifically. The playing time of Trayvon Mullen, Isaiah Simmons, Jace Whitaker, and more. That's coming next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. There has been a lot of talk about, especially on defense, the playing time of some of the players, namely Isaiah Simmons, who has, you know, has turned his all defensive role into a part-time role. When you've got a guy like Jace Whitaker, nobody in the fan base except for Jace's family, maybe a few U of A fans, wants to see Jace Whitaker playing, and he played a lot. They traded for a cornerback in Trayvon Mullen, who's yet to log a defensive snap this season. Tell me, what do we do with this?
I think the Trayvon Mullen thing's easier to explain. And that is that you've got a guy that got really his first week of practice last week. And so, yeah, he didn't play. And so I get it. Like Jess said, and this is, you know, we don't mean to be super negative, but it's just a reality. Like, Jace Whitaker's just not a very good NFL player. He's just not. And
to be honest, he hasn't been good enough to be on the Cardinals 53-man roster in three seasons.
Right. And so he's doing what he can. He's trying to be, you know, a player that gives you something. And like I said, last week was literally the best game he's ever played against the Raiders. And then he comes back and he plays one of his worst games against the Rams. And so, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, it's not shocking. It's not, again, it's not his fault. Like, he's just not a talented enough player to be getting 95% of the snaps in a defensive snaps in a game.
I have a theory on this as well. And we need to remember the context of this. Trayvon Mullen was not necessarily, what did they give up for him? A conditional 7th round pick. He wasn't being counted on to be a starter. They sort of traded for him to be cornerback 4. The starters on this team are Byron Murphy, Marco Wilson, Antonio Hamilton. I think the Cardinals understood that Trayvon Mullen was not for those first 3 weeks, especially he came over injured. They knew that.
Well, that's kind of my thing, is it's not like he's been practicing. No. So that's my biggest thing.
And people aren't listening to the coaches. If you've listened to now, well, people
to
want
be,
Mullen.
To
people
be fair,
want they... Mullen to play. I get that. He is long. He's been a starter. There's some talent there. But if you had to listen to Cliff Kingsbury every single week, he downplayed the opportunity of Mullen playing because he's got to get comfortable on our defense. And if there's one thing we kind of know about Vance Joseph by now, based on the usage of some of the guys that we, especially like an inside linebacker, if you have the choice of a more talented player who is a higher risk of mental errors leading to busted, especially cornerback, busted coverages, or a lesser talented player who you trust will always be in the right spot, a.k.a. Jace Whitaker, who are you going to go with schematically, especially when you know you have little room for error on your defense? You're going to go with the knowledge of the scheme. They have talked up Jace Whitaker since training camp because he is, there's one thing we can say about him, he is reliable. And a reliable player is a coach's best friend because you know what to expect from him. Mullen, it looks like, I would expect, is ready to play this week and might get role on the defense just because of how they've done, well, one, the practice squad rules. They've already used up his 3 standard elevations, so if they do it again, he now has to clear waivers, which he probably will clear waivers, let's be honest. But They're probably going to need the elevations elsewhere, as they only have two safeties on the rosters. We're going to talk about in the roster and roster moves. But I think this is the week where Trayvon probably gets his role on defense. And then he's going to be relegated to the cornerback four role, because Antonio Hamilton's going to come back. And I feel maybe when they made that trade that it was to replace Hamilton. I think because they didn't know how long Hamilton was going to be out, that it was for Hamilton, maybe, if he can't come back right away.
Yeah, and honestly, like, that's goes back to what you and I have talked about before, is that it just feels like sometimes people get excited about something, but they don't actually pay attention to what's going on. And so it's like, oh, the Arizona Cardinals trade for Trayvon Mullen. Oh, they traded for a cornerback. Perfect. Well, no, they traded for a guy in Trayvon Mullen who was injured. So he wasn't practicing when he came over. He wasn't practicing when he got here. And then you're like, well, why isn't he getting snaps? It's like, well, the dude hasn't practiced with this team. So all of his reps or understanding of the defense just comes from film and being in meetings right now. So he's got to get on the floor or on the field and show Vance something before it's like, oh, okay, now he's playing. And like you said, it'll probably come over the next week or two. But if you thought he was going to come in and be the starter or be a starter or impact player from day one, I mean, you probably didn't pay attention to the fact that he was hurt when they traded for him. Right? So it's unfortunate that every move is looked at this way of like that it was a mistake or an error. But at the same time,
to give him you a have round pick for him.
And you have to let it unfold. Like, it's not over yet. Like, this is basically them starting now with him. And so now they can kind of see what they have in him, because they haven't been able to do that yet.
We can look at Isaiah Simmons as well. Isaiah Simmons is an interesting case, is because they were ready to turn over large, gigantic role to Simmons. And then after week one, it wasn't just, it was, he played badly on a lot of levels. He was, and the problem was, he wasn't getting guys lined up. He was playing with bad leverage. And so, you know, if a guy that they were going to have to count on to do so many things, and then he couldn't be counted on to do any of those things, they have now, okay, let's shrink that role. Let's get him locked in. And if we're going to read between the lines, it feels like, you know, talk of Kyler Murray and his practice habits and his study habits. It sounds like Isaiah Simmons was feeling himself a little too much as a young player who's exceedingly physically talented. He got exposed for not being completely locked in. He expected to be better than he was without doing all the right things. And so now they're locking him back down, expanding that. But it does lead to a really, really strange playing rotation at inside linebacker. What feels like, hey, we're playing everybody now, because Zaven Collins is getting snaps. Isaiah Simmons is getting a few snaps. Nick Vigil's getting snaps. Ben Neiman's getting snaps. Tanner Vallejo's getting snaps. Everyone's getting snaps. And Zeke Turner was getting snaps when he was healthy too.
Yeah, and it's just the reality that they're just, I think, one, it shows what their expectation was for Isaiah, right? It takes three guys, including Isaiah, to replace what they expected Isaiah to be able to do. And so I don't know if that's fair, right? Like, I don't know if that's fair for Isaiah, but it was what the expectation was. So fair or not, you know, we can debate that till we're blue in the face. It is what it is. You know, and then from there, it's what we've discussed before. They've got to figure out what they want and what they need from their backers. And if it's taking three guys to do it, then they're probably asking a little too much, wouldn't you say? Like,
probably.
And so that's the thing, is you look at the defensive snaps. Zaven has played, and I don't know if anybody's played 100% of the snaps. I'm not on the right site to tell you, but 184 is the most. Okay, so 184. So Zaven's at 169. So he's right up there with the leaders. Isaiah's next in the linebacker snaps with 92. And where he's not being utilized is what the concern has been with him from the beginning, and he's got 20 snaps against the run. And look, you and I have expected him to take the next step. We've hoped that it was going to happen. The reality is, thus far, it hasn't. And there's a reason why, when you look at the inside linebacker snaps, you see that Tanner Vallejo has played more against the run. Why Ben Neiman, who's only played 22 snaps, has 13 against the run. And then Isaiah Simmons, who's played 92 snaps, has only played 20 against the run. Like, they don't trust him against the run. And when you play in the NFC West, that is an issue. I mean, there's no other way to put it. When you have to play against the Los Angeles Rams and Sean McVay, and you have to play against the San Francisco 49ers and Kyle Shanahan, if you cannot help your team stop the run, you're a liability. And right now, he's one of their worst run defenders. And that is why he's not getting on the field consistently, because they can't put him on the field when there is a chance that the other team might run the football.
Yeah, and at least if he can start out being an elite coverage backer, which I think they believe he can be, that he can be an elite coverage guy, that and that's how the talk changes. So, if you're not playing 100% of the snaps, but if you're getting 40 snaps, you're getting 30 snaps, and you are being great in those 30 to 40 snaps, you are still being a great, great player. That said, it is disappointing, because when you are counting on him to be good at the other things as well, it means that it's less than what you wanted initially. But even in a reduced role, if he can impact the game greatly in those roles, okay, it won't feel as bad. That said, number 8 pick, you want to see him on the field all the time. That's kind of what we were promised.
He's got to be close to 100% snap player to basically justify the pick at this point. And that's the thing, is like, I'm not advocating that he's not good enough. I'm not advocating that they're doing this and it's the right decision. I'm just telling you the reason that he's not playing more is because they don't trust him against the run. And so if you can't trust a guy to do something that's 50%, right, of the duty of a linebacker, then it makes it really difficult to play him. So it's unfortunate, man, because there was expectations, obviously, but it is what it is at this point.
Coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals have some more injuries and some interesting roster moves. Let's go over them next. That's coming up next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Roster moves and injuries. Oh, my goodness. The receiver room, they need they need Rondale back. They need to make it through to week seven, because AJ Green now looks like he's going to miss time. Bone bruise in his knee, it appears. Say what you want, yes, and get AJ Green off the field. The problem is you're replacing AJ Green with Andy Isabella, which is not a better option, as we saw. Andy's the only guy above 5'9 in that room, and they don't know if Rondale Moore's going to be back this week, and that's going to be very, very, very interesting if they have to piecemeal a receiver room that includes Hollywood Brown, Greg Dortch, Andy Isabella, and
Andre Bocelli.
They're all guys that they trust, but who?
Well, and I think it does two things. One, it does show you the fragility of the situation. Obviously, Antoine Wesley is eligible to come back next week, so or after the Carolina game is what I meant. So, you know, you can hope with that. The other reality is that I think it puts a little pressure on them to figure out what they have in Trey McBride or utilize McBride in different ways to try to give yourself, like you said, some bigger targets, because at this point you're running out of size options. And you saw that Isabella is still not really a guy that you can trust, because he just seems to,
he doesn't beat starting corners.
Yeah. And there are issues. There are a lot of issues that he has, but you know, the one issue that we were surprised at, and it came up again in this game, was that he just doesn't finish. And yeah. With that, you know, can you even play him? So, you know, like I said, we'll figure out how this works this week. Carolina, like you said, has got a decent defense. They're not bad defensively, but they have been. I don't want to say they are. They have been bad offensively.
Yeah. Hopefully it doesn't change this week. Another injury that came up. Now, a couple of that don't seem to. They're probably going to be an issue. Justin Pugh, who left the game with an elbow injury in the first half, played the second half and finished the game. So I'm not anticipating that to be a problem. He'll probably get some time off during the week. Zayman Collins looks to be all right, but defensive tackle Rashard Lawrence had hand surgery. It looks like he broke his hand or something of the sort, and he's going to be out for at least this week. Please. please, maybe just this week, because that would make third year in a row he is on injured reserve. But they need bodies at and on the defensive line.
And it just sucks because he had been playing so well.
Yeah, they like him. They like him a lot. Statistically, he's had four tackles in three games. And
right, but he just does a nice job to help out against the run and gives them a big body on the interior. And he just, yeah, I mean, it's just unfortunate because, like you said, he just can't figure out how to stay healthy. And this is, thankfully, this one's different. This isn't another leg injury. This is an actual new thing. And I'm not trying to like discredit him or anything like that, but you know, when you're a guy that came into the league with lower body injuries, and then you have lower body injuries every season, it sucks that you're finally playing well and healthy, and now you have a fluke hand injury.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing though about defensive line we know. It's possible, and we've seen defensive line do it a lot. If he can manage the pain, put that club on, he should be able to play sooner than later, unless it's major. I did see he had a cast on it even after the game on Sunday. So hopefully, I didn't figure he would be playing this week. Other than that, they made a couple roster moves on Tuesday, which was kind of interesting. They cut Deontay Thompson, leaving only two safeties on the roster so that they could sign Jesse Luketta. sign him to the active roster because apparently the Baltimore Ravens wanted him. They do really like Laketta. They just don't have room on the roster. But my goodness, they have now have seven outside linebackers on the roster. Myjai Sanders hasn't even dressed for a game, and now they only have two safeties. Totally expect if Thompson clears waivers, will be on the practice squad. He'll get one of the elevations to the active roster this week. But wow, it's very interesting in terms of roster management, because that's a lot of outside backers.
Yeah, and like you said, they're not playing. I mean, Cam Thompson has eight snaps on the season. You know, it's a situation. Victor Dimakaji has 49 snaps on the season. Dennis Gardeck only has 67. Devin Kennard only has 67. So it's not like these guys are playing a ton anyways. You know, Marcus Golden leads the way with 110. So you look at it from that perspective. I mean, Deontay Thompson's played six snaps all year. So it's not like they're hurting on the defensive side with him, but it is an interesting
gamble. They only have their starters at safety. That is literally all they have.
It's a gamble, man. Like, it's an interesting gamble to take. There's no other way to describe it.
I mean, the other option, you still do have Isaiah Simmons, and he has been working with the defensive backs for some time. So, and maybe that's where they've been able to kind of cheat themselves on a roster spot, as they know they've got Isaiah if they need him, especially now he's not playing every snap, that in a pinch you could put him out there and have him play at a high level.
Right. And so that's what you have to look at. And that's the way you have to look at it at this point. But yeah, right now, I mean, when you look at it, they've only played three guys that play safety or labeled as safety have gotten snaps at safety, and 184 for Jalen Thompson, and Buda Baker has 180. So Deontay Thompson has six. I don't think, knock on wood, it's not an issue, but it is an interesting risk to take that he clears waivers and all of that.
Coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Best Star of Tardos Talk on the Way. We're going to talk a little bit more before we get into the Panthers game. So, pass rush, a very interesting thing. Stats say they don't have it. Metrics say they're not bad. Let's come to the next one, Rise Up Sea Red. You're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the Web. The pass rush has been lacking. The only two sacks on the team are J.J. Watt, who has had a sack in each of the last 2 weeks, which, by the way, is a positive thing. Getting J.J. Watt involved in that pass rush is impactful. But those are the only two sacks that they have. Interesting stat, they are number one in pass rush win rate. I don't understand. We addressed this a little bit in the part, but what do we need to see in the pass rush? Because if there's one thing we've gotten a few hits. Zach Allen has been impactful. I think he's played extremely well. Marcus Golden, we need to get him going. He needs to be producing at a high level. I'm not talking like 20 sacks, but we need to see him getting hits and tackles for losses and getting sacks. We need, like, the Cardinals need him to be a double-digit sack guy. Unfortunately, they need that from him. And it's also going to say they're not playing their edge guys. They're just not getting to the quarterback yet. And I understand that part of it has been the coverage needs to be better and teams are getting ball out very quickly. But maybe this is the week. Baker is not on the same, like, their first three quarterbacks that they played are very talented quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes, very, very good. Derek Carr, what you think about Derek Carr, he's still one of the smartest quarterbacks and they have an offense that will get the ball out. And then Matthew Stafford, they did pressure him, but it wasn't enough. But I think that without actual sacks, I don't know if we're going to get a high level of defense no matter what.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to, right? So you look at it, their leader in, like, total pressure, so sacks, hits, and hurries, is Zach Allen with 11. And you might say, well, 11's not bad. And it's probably not. But like you look at it, he has 11. Next on the list is Golden with 7. And then next on the list, J.J. Watt was 6. And Watts had 50 pass rushing snaps. So like one in every 9 snaps, he's getting a pressure or a sack or a hurry, you know, something to that effect. It's the other guys not being able to do it consistently. You know, Allen's at the same rate. But like they need more. Gardeck, you know, only has 40 pass rushes. Devin Kennard almost 34. You know, like you said, they're not bringing anything. Victor Dembélé, he has 27. He has 1 on the season. Like whether it's a sack, a hit, or a hurry, he has 1.
But interestingly enough, they are the number 1 pass rush win rate team, which is a very odd. That means the pass rushers are beating their defenders. They're beating their blocker. And just not getting there. Zach Allen, number 3 in the entire league. Aaron Donald is number 1. Quinnen Williams, number 2. Zach Allen, number 3. 19% of his pass rushes, he is flat out beating his blocker.
Yeah, so now it just comes to, can they finish? And like you said, so far the answer is no. Your name's J.J. Watt. And so they got to figure that out. If they want to turn this thing around.
Do you, though, with a stat like that, when you see that metric, do you then believe that the sacks are coming? Because you know, the old adage is always said, sacks come in bunches. If this is a legitimate metric, will we see a big sack game coming soon?
I mean, that's the thing is...
Ooh. Playing with the lead will help that a lot.
That's really what it comes down to. I mean, when you look at their pass rushes, you know, in 3 games, the leader in pass rushes is 98. So just like times they've actually rushed the passer, which in 3 games, that's about 33 a game. Right. And that's just not very many because the next highest is 71 in Marcus Golden, which means, again, you know, in 3 games, you're about 24. And so, like, you know, J.J. Watt in 2 games is at 25 a game. Like, so those numbers tell me that they aren't sure what they have to get to the passer because they're not putting guys in a position to rush the passer consistently outside of Zach Allen. And so that's what it's going to come down to is like, who's going to be the guy that steps up outside of Watt that starts to finish. Allen obviously looks like the guy that can do it. But he's got to, I mean, I'm not being rude. I think he has 4 sacks in his career.
Yeah. I think he had 4 sacks last year. That was his career high.
He has 6 total.
Yeah. I think I had like 1 each of the previous 2.
So like, that's the thing is like, this is a guy who, if he comes out and finishes, all of a sudden, all of these hits and hurries and all of that stuff turn into important numbers, but thus far they've been kind of just empty, and they need him to be more successful in that rate. So he's one of the guys on the team that has that type of success.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to wrap things up. Final segment, we're going to talk about their game coming up against the Carolina Panthers, preview, predict, things like that. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. This game against the Carolina Panthers, critical. Maybe not, like we said, a must win or the season is over. But if they don't win, the sky's falling and fans are done. And so in terms of what we're expected, they will get booed if they do not beat the Panthers. And When they come back home and play Philly, it'll be an ugly situation when it comes to the fans. That said, This is a great opportunity for the Cardinals to kind of get right. Panthers, with their one win, kind of doing it with the one win was this last weekend, and they still offensively are kind of a mess. They beat the Saints 22-14. Six of those points came from a defensive touchdown. They haven't cracked 300 yards of offense yet, and of those 293 yards they had against the Saints, 67 of them came in one play on a busted play with Laviska Shenault when he busted free on a kind of a screen that no one tackled him.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to come down to, can they stop Christian McCaffrey? I mean, honestly, that's kind of where it's at. He's having another, you know, really good year. And then after that, it's a lot of bad. I mean, their first overall pick, Ikem Ekwonu, hasn't been good. You know, their quarterback, Baker Mayfield's been borderline awful. Like, I hate to say that because it just seems like it's going to come back to bite you. But like, the reality is he has not been good. And so, you know, you look at it, his last two games, McCaffrey had 102 rushing yards against the Giants, and then 108 rushing yards against the Saints. He's averaging close to 5 yards per carry. He's playing well again. I mean, he's a very good running back. There's no two ways about it. The interesting part is they haven't been able to really get him going in the passing game. So, you know, for the Cardinals, let's hope that continues. Baker has just, he's just been bad. I mean, there's no other way around it. You know, on the season, he's completing 51% of his passes. He's not putting the receivers in a position to make plays. He only has 3 touchdowns to 1 interception. So he's not turning the ball over or anything like that, but he's just not hitting his receivers. He's not giving them a chance to be successful. And like I said, the Carolina offense hasn't been great. Pat Elflein and Austin Corbett haven't been bad, but Brady Christensen and especially Ikem Ekwonu have been really, really bad in pass pro. Run blocking, you know, they get a little bit better. They still have some weapons. I mean, you mentioned Laviska Shenault. He's only played 11 plays. So it's, you know, we'll see what he adds. It's interesting because DJ Moore has kind of been held in check, but I think a lot of that's due to Baker.
Yeah. Well, something's got to give, right? The Cardinals have never lost to Baker and they haven't beaten the Panthers since 2013.
Right. And so, you know, Moore has 88 yards on the season. 7 catches, 88 yards. Like, that's a normal game for him. Not a season's worth.
Right.
Robbie Anderson's, you know, got a little bit better numbers, but I think he's the benefactor of, I think it was one big play he had in the first game. Yeah. Cause in the first game he had 102 yards. And then since then he has 46.
And then that's like the Shenault play last week. That kind of it's been his year. They do have, like, I will say this, Carolina's defense is talented and we saw what they were able to do. Now they lost their major pass rush weapon from last year in Hassan Reddick. And if we recall last year, that was Colt McCoy's bad game. You know, of the 3 starts that he had, Colt McCoy looked like why he hasn't been a starter in 10 years. And it's because they fell behind early. This is a game where they can't afford to do that. They do have a strong enough defense to keep you down. Now, New Orleans moved the ball. They had over 400 yards total offense, but turned the ball over three times. One thing the Cardinals have done this well this year is not turn the ball over. So that is one big positive. Kyler's taking care of the football. The team is taking care of the football. They just need to they need to get a lead so that they cannot just simply Christian McCaffrey way their way to a win.
And because that's what they'll try to do.
Yeah, that's totally what they will do. And that's all they'll need to do. If they get a lead, the Cardinals do not have the strength defensively to stop Christian McCaffrey for an entire game. And so if they build a lead and they can just mitigate that just a little bit, put the game plan on Baker, we know Baker's probably going to mess up. He's going to probably make a mistake or two, and that'll be all the Cardinals will need.
Yeah, and the Panthers' defensive strength this season has been their run defense. They've done a really nice job against the run. J.C. Horn, their young cornerback, has been excellent this season in coverage. So I'm going to be interested to see if, you know, if Rondale Moore's not back, if they shadow Horn onto Marquise Brown, because he's really their best option. Because after that, their coverage numbers have been not great. I mean, you get C.J. Henderson, who's, you know, the former first-round pick that hasn't done great. Dante Jackson is not terrible. He's a former second-round pick, but, I mean, he got eaten alive in game one and game three. Miles Hartsfield is an undrafted free agent. He had a really nice game one, but has really, really fallen by the wayside the last 2 weeks. So you look at those numbers, and it really is just J.C. Horn. And then, you know, like you said, they lost Hassan. And Brian Burns has been excellent. He continues to develop as a pass rusher, and is turning into a very good pass rusher. But after him, it is a quick fall off. And guys like Derek Brown and Matt Ioannidis, who are excellent run defenders, are not getting much push in the pass game. So that's where it's going to be, is like, can the Cardinals, if they are depleted at the wide receiver position, can they get enough going in the passing game? Because I can promise you that the Panthers, if it comes down to having to stop the run, that is what they do best.
That sounds like they need to get, this is a game to, well, another Greg Dortch game. It needs to be a Zach Ertz game, and they need to utilize, it might be, you know, the short passing and for the running backs, kind of a James Conner game where he kind of does it all rather than necessarily run the ball, or an Eno game. So they can get those, and then ideally make a couple plays down the field to do that. And if Andy Isabella has to play, maybe he gets behind someone so he doesn't have to run through anyone. That would be ideal in that sense. But
yeah, you know. and that's what you hope. I mean, man, that's really what you hope, is that they're able to take advantage. And I can tell you this, this perfect way to kind of end this, they, you know, what we talked about at the beginning, this comes full circle. And if they're able to get a lead, it's going to put a lot of pressure on Baker Mayfield, who has not been good this year, to make plays, and he just hasn't done so yet.
So with that, I think the Cardinals, I always predict them. I think they play for all right. I think this is a kind of their get right-ish game. It's going to be easy, but I think they come away with a 24-20 win this weekend and sort of get things right, get an early lead. It'll be physical throughout the game, but they'll kind of lead the entire way. It's kind of how I expect this game to play out.
Yeah, I think they can win this game. I think they should win this game. Obviously, if the weather changes or it's a nightmare, it could be a little bit different. But I actually think that this game where you see them come out and play well, and I think they win 31-17.
Ooh, excellent. Well, with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk. Web, hopefully, we're not going to become the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the doom and gloom place of talking about the Cardinals in a week from now. But we will be back again in a week after, hopefully, a Cardinals win. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is episode 374. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red. Whoa!